The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Wait, let me get up a minute. 1 second. Yeah, I listen to Nicole Sandler. Is it time for the Nicole Sandler show?
It is. Come on.
Oh, I forgot to turn the computer on.
Oh, come on.
Let me just walk over here and I'll boot up my computer because I don't want... Oh, crap. Never mind. It's okay.
This is the kind of day I'm having.
Leave it there. The cat will get it. Got a little tune here. A little song to sing for you. That Nicole, she does something. She's really there. And does things.
Some things. Whatever.
Nicole Sandler Show. Whatever it is.
That's kind of how I'm feeling today. So we went with this intro today. Because it's one of those days. It started off wonderfully, right? The House passed the Build Back Better Act. I honestly didn't think that was going to happen. Well, now it goes to the Senate, and you know, so Manchinima can screw it up. But hey, you know, let's celebrate the small victories while we can, because they're kind of few and far between these days. And then it just got worse from there. You know the news. The judge, that wonderfully impartial judge out in Kenosha, Wisconsin, led the jury to a not guilty on all counts verdict for Kyle Rittenhouse. I'm so glad that we start off today with a guest who I had booked before the verdict came down, and I'm glad he's here, and I'm just going to bring him in so we can commiserate on the madness that is today. Aaron Rupar is a he's a Twitter wonder. His Twitter handle is @Rupar, R-U-P-A-R. And he used to cover Republican stuff for Vox, not Fox, but Vox. And now he's just gone out on his own. He launched a Substack newsletter that you can get at aaronrupar.substack.com. And he's still keeping his Twitter feed as important as it always has been. But now he's doing it for himself. So, Aaron, welcome to the world of being your own boss.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
How's it going so far?
It's kind of new and exciting. It's a bit of a grind, but so far so good.
Yeah. And I thank you for the work you've done and you continue to do, because you make my life a lot easier, because I'm a one woman show here and I'm always pulling audio and finding clips, and you make my life a lot easier with your Twitter feed, because I'm able to grab a lot of stuff from, for instance, last night, Kevin McCarthy, I don't know what he did. I guess he tried to do a filibuster, but nobody told him that the filibusters are in the Senate. But he did it anyway. For the third time, he used some loophole that party leaders get in the House, whereby they can take a minute and stretch it out to as long as they want to stretch it out. And last night he did that for 8.5 hours. Did you watch the whole thing?
No, I did not watch the whole thing. I tapped out after maybe 3.5 hours of watching it, maybe even 2.5. I know my friend Asen, who also, I'm sure you're familiar with him. He posts a lot of clips.
Oh, yeah.
I was DMing with him today, and he said that he stayed up for all but like the last half hour or so. I just value my weekends and life more than that, because I mean, we kind of knew that it was basically just a performative tantrum. It wasn't going to change anybody's minds. It wasn't going to change the votes, the successful vote that took place this morning. And if anything, if the idea was to, force Democrats to vote on this, on the Build Back Better bill in the middle of the night, it ended up failing, because they adjourned for a few hours and then got back together this morning first thing and voted. Obviously, given the events later in the day with the Rittenhouse verdict, it seems like kind of old news already, which is just sort of unfortunate. You know, this historic piece of legislation gets passed in the House and we've already kind of moved on to this other huge story. So the timing just ended up being kind of unfortunate in that respect. But no, I didn't watch the whole thing. And actually, like many other people last night, was kind of surprised that it was happening because, as you mentioned, there's no filibuster in the House. And I know Nancy Pelosi, it was maybe 3 or 4 years ago, she gave a speech under similar circumstances that was actually the previous record holder for longest speech. Before
right. She did eight hours and 7 minutes, but speaking in support of the Dreamers, hoping, you know, to get something in to give them a path to citizenship. And so she had a cause there that she was advocating for. I believe she kind of stuck to the subject back then when she spoke for over 8 hours, something that Kevin McCarthy didn't necessarily do last night.
No, he did not. And I was just going to say, because I think Pelosi kind of telegraphed that ahead of time, too. It was like, I'm going to start. It was during the day. I also remember that. So it was like, I'm going to start a speech at 10 a.m. And, you know, she ended up going pretty much the whole day. Whereas with McCarthy, it was like kind of this surprise that he was doing this. And as you mentioned, I mean, he was all over the place. I tuned in kind of late. He had already been speaking for like an hour or so by the time I started watching. But you know, I posted clips of him talking about these bizarre swim meets involving different countries that are getting destroyed during the swim meet. I mean, it was crazy. He was talking about, you know, how grateful he was that Abraham Lincoln was the first Republican president
and
he's upset that Trump didn't win a Nobel Peace Prize. And, you know, it was just all over the map, which I guess when you're giving a speech of that length, isn't surprising that he would stray a little bit from the topic at hand. But, you know, this is what I kind of wrote in my recap today of it, is that it sort of revealed, you know, just how little of a cause there is kind of underpinning all of this stuff from McCarthy. And he avoided talking about specifics of the bill, which isn't surprising because the Build Back Better bill polls very strongly, even among independents and Republicans. And so it's not surprising that McCarthy would avoid trying to talk about popular proposals that are part of the legislation and instead kind of focus on nonsense or screaming about the border or inflation, things like that. But I do think it was kind of a commentary on, you know, how little Republicans are standing for these days, that he gives this huge, long speech, you know, a kind of a pivotal moment. And the best he can do is kind of screaming about, you know, these various kind of only tangentially related topic. So yeah, it made for kind of interesting clipping and posting last night. But like I said, I value my upcoming weekend here too much to have taken the bullet of watching that whole thing.
I
tapped out.
Right. I didn't watch any of it. But this morning, I enjoyed going through your Twitter stream. I'm not going to play the video because going back and forth, because they're short clips. But let me share a few of the clips that you posted for those of us who didn't sit and watch C-SPAN and Kevin McCarthy ramble on for 8.5 hours last night. Here are just a few random postings that you made, Aaron, on your Twitter stream last night, like this one.
You're celebrating it when inflation is at a 31% high. Gas prices, Thanksgiving,
what?
A border that in a few months breaks every record of the last 3 years combined.
Okay, well, I don't even know what that means. It's just like random words and phrases.
That's what it seemed like. You know, at a certain point, he seemed to kind of get tired, and the whatever coherency there was to his speech started to kind of dissipate. And that moment that you just played was one that I kind of picked out where, yeah, I mean, it was just kind of like the synapses in his brain were just sort of randomly firing. And, you know, it was like whatever kind of half-baked thought entered his mind, he was just kind of yelling. And, you know, I mean, this came, you know, I don't know if you got into this yesterday, but kind of the backstory of this whole thing is that Mark Meadows did an interview yesterday with a right-wing podcast where, you know, he was very pointed in criticizing Kevin McCarthy, and especially with the development of 13 Republicans, you know, breaking away from McCarthy's position to vote for the bipartisan infrastructure bill. And Trump has been upset about that too. And so Meadows was out there floating the idea of if Republicans retake the House, of installing Trump as speaker, which, you know, technically you could do because the speaker is elected.
Does not
by
have
the House,
to be a member.
Does not need to be a member of the House. Mm-hmm. And so there was kind of this idea that the speech that McCarthy was giving was like an audition for the speaker role. And if that was the idea, I mean, he definitely failed the audition because, you know, I think, you know, I've watched a ton of Trump speeches, obviously, over the years, and Trump has more charisma, you know, in his toenail than McCarthy does in his whole body. And that was very evident last night. And, you know, it just kind of exposed him for, I think, kind of the vacuous politician that he really is. But yeah, I mean, there are a number of clips. If you kind of pull them up on my Twitter feed, or the right. Recount had some and ASIN had some, where as the night went along, it got weirder and weirder, which by C-SPAN standards was very entertaining.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's another one.
Jimmy Carter and Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Not Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
And not Donald Trump after Abraham Accords.
Oh, okay.
Jimmy Carter.
Oh, he was talking about bitching that Donald Trump hasn't won a Nobel Peace Prize. Okay.
Right, right.
Then I guess he noticed that at one point Speaker Pelosi returned to the House, and this happened.
Would it raise a question if China shut down their domestic flights but kept their international open?
Okay. Hello.
Welcome, Madam Speaker.
Yeah. This is a pregnant pause, I guess.
Okay. I'm just getting geared up.
He's just getting geared up. So what happened was, I guess, and again, I wasn't there, but I read a lot about it today. And so Nancy Pelosi came back in at around midnight and went around to her members and said, "You can go. We're not voting tonight." Because what Kevin McCarthy obviously wanted to do is delay this a few hours so that the vote would be held in the middle of the night, in the dead of night, in the dark of night. And Nancy Pelosi said, "We're not doing that. We'll come back tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock and we'll do that." But then when he kept going, I realized that wasn't his goal at all. He wanted to shatter Nancy Pelosi's record of 8 minutes and 7 seconds. So he goes for eight and a half minutes.
8 minutes and 7 seconds. Oh, it was 8 hours.
I mean, 8 hours. 8 hours and 7 minutes. But yeah, right.
I wish it was eight
minutes. It's Friday. So he goes for 8.5 hours. And then Madison Cawthorn, who's sitting behind him, chewing tobacco and spitting it into a spittoon. Is that allowed in the House chamber?
As I've paid more and more attention to Congress over the years, one thing that does kind of become clear is that they can kind of do whatever they want in, you know, within certain bounds. But yeah, apparently, I mean, you know, Madison Cawthorn on camera.
Yeah.
No less. I mean, this wasn't like kind of a thing where, he was in the corner trying to be sneaky. He was right on camera behind McCarthy putting in a big dip. And that was after I went to bed, but I saw that this morning and was like, oh my God, you know, because that,
that's gross. Yeah,
Madison Cawthorn is like what, 20?
25. I think he's just 25.
I thought the chewing tobacco thing, I mean, I know people still do it, but I guess I'm just surprised anybody in Congress does that because, you know,
it's disgusting.
it is disgusting. So,
in fact,
trying to be nice.
Right. No, it's disgusting. Yeah. We don't have to be nice here. You know, Madison Cawthorn is a pig who apparently today, after the verdict was read and Kyle Rittenhouse was found not guilty on all counts. I'm still in disbelief about that. Madison Cawthorn offered him an internship.
He did.
Already.
Yeah.
He did.
I don't know if you have that clip. It's quite the clip. It's a very short clip, but there was a video. I think Madison Cawthorn posted this on his Instagram. But in any event,
here it is. Okay. Hold on. I'll bring up the video. Hold on 1 second so everyone can see his lovely face. Madison Cawthorn. Here it is. This is astounding. Here we go.
Kyle Rittenhouse is not guilty, my friends. You have a right to defend yourselves. Be armed, be dangerous, and be moral.
Oh, my God. Be armed, be dangerous, and be moral? Well,
yes,
he was.
That was the part that I took away, just kind of turning the rhetoric up to 11 there. And that's, I'm sure Rittenhouse will be kind of this right wing celebrity. I wouldn't be surprised if he speaks at CPAC, coming up in a few months. And I wish I could say I was surprised by the verdict. I really wasn't. A lot of legal minds who I trust and who have good insight were saying during the trial that based on how the self-defense law in Wisconsin is written, that it was going to be tough to secure a conviction because as nutty as it may seem to normal people, there is kind of this idea enshrined in Wisconsin law that if you have a reasonable belief that you are in physical danger, it's kind of like all bets are off, anything that you need to do in your own, you know, anything that you need to do in your goal to keep yourself safe is kind of fair game. And so that seemed to be kind of where things were trending for a while.
Right.
I actually would have been more surprised had there been a conviction. But, you know, when you combine, you know, we've all seen the video of the shootings, and then, you know, all of us have seen the videos from this trial of the judge, you know, who seemed like he was kind of operating more as a defense attorney a lot of the time than like an impartial than an impartial official overseeing the trial. And so when you kind of combine all those factors, I'm not surprised. You know, we have really gotten, I think, an extra dose of kind of like, I don't know if smugness is the right word, but a lot of these right wing pundits who seem to kind of view this as like a total exoneration of everything that Rittenhouse did. And I've seen a lot of people attacking Biden because Biden at one point characterized Rittenhouse as a white supremacist. And, you know, there's kind of this belief circulating out there that, you know, somehow this refutes Biden,
you know,
characterizing Rittenhouse as a white supremisist, even though Rittenhouse was photographed with Proud Boys making a white
he
power
is a white
sign
supremacist.
After the shootings,
exactly.
You know?
So, exactly. Yeah. And here's the thing that gets me. And we've dealt with this a lot in the last week or two. Ellie Mistal was on at the beginning of the trial. And I actually played back the 10 minutes segment that we talked about Kyle Rittenhouse. And the first thing he says, that white boy is going to walk. And sure enough, he did. And he was spot on in everything he predicted. But I don't know if you know Jack Rice. Jack Rice is a radio colleague, friend of mine from, we were on Air America at the same time. He is a defense attorney, a criminal defense attorney in Minneapolis. And so he was on with us on Wednesday talking about this case. And, you know, the thing is, and here's what I'm not an attorney. I'm just a layperson who has common sense. And my thought is Kyle Rittenhouse put himself in that position. He crossed the state line with the help of his mother. He's a minor, had a gun that was illegally purchased for him that he shouldn't have had. And the judge should not have thrown out that charge. But the point is, he had no standing to be there. We've heard the word standing a lot when it comes to legal matters, right? And all of these suits that were brought against, you know, in favor of Donald Trump and against the election, most of them were thrown out because the people who brought the suits had no standing. They had no horse in that race. They had no, it wasn't their issue. Well, Kyle Rittenhouse had no reason to be in Kenosha that night. He was a 17-year-old who lived across the border in Illinois. He took this gun that what he wasn't legally supposed to have, went into Kenosha, inserted himself into that situation, and then said, well, I had to defend myself. No, he didn't have to be there. He put himself in the position to be a protagonist where it didn't exist. That's provoking the matter. I'm astounded by this.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, too, is if you watched his cross-examination, the prosecutor did a pretty good job catching him in a number of lies about why he was there.
Right.
You know, he told everybody on the scene that he was a medic. It turned out he had no medical training. You know, he said that he felt a need to protect businesses there, despite the fact that at the time of the shooting, some of these businesses were already under police protection. Police had kind of set up a perimeter that protected a lot of these businesses, so there was no need.
Yes.
But I think, you know, this is kind of a fantasy that I think a lot of people on the right have, you know, this idea of kind of like a good guy with a gun, you know, putting on air quotes because we all saw what happened here. But, you know, I do think there's kind of a deep seated thing here with people on the right. I mean, this is kind of, I don't know if they kind of fantasize about doing stuff like this where, you know, it's like they go into a, you know, an Antifa or BLM protest. And, you know, but the scary thing is, you know, what this says going forward in terms of where is this line drawn where, you know, if someone shows up outside an abortion clinic with an AR-15 and, you know, someone tries to, you know, someone's worried that they're an active shooter and tries to tackle them or God knows what, you know, then where is that line drawn between self-defense and murder? And, you know, I think this kind of moves a line in sort of a troubling way, at least in Wisconsin, where, like you were saying, Nicole, I mean, you know, anybody who's kind of like a sane mindset, you know, you watch this video and it's very clear that Rittenhouse was escalating the situation,
yes,
that he was provoking people, that he didn't need to be there, that he had no good reason to be there. And that doesn't necessarily mean that he's guilty of murder. But also I think, you know, the fact that, like you were saying, he had this illegally purchased gun.
How is it self-defense when you provoke the situation that brings it on?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems to me that there was some crime committed there. I guess you could argue whether it's you know, is it murder? Is it, you know, possession of an illegal gun, you know, a charge which the judge threw out at the end of the trial. So, that is disturbing. I think the fact that, you know, he's walking totally free at this point. And I just hope that, you know, it doesn't set kind of a, you know, a new normal where, you know, at protests, you see people with AR-15s. It's obviously an escalation. But I guess, according to the letter of the law, at least in Wisconsin, you know, you sort of have to just hope that people, you know, the Rittenhouses of the world don't open fire, or you don't look at them wrong where they get scared of you sort of thing. And, you know, it is certainly something that's become a huge cause on the right. And I think, Nicole, I'm sure you've been there too, where there are certain things that you tweet that seem to really bring out the crazies.
Oh, my God. I got to tell you. Tweet. I had to put my tweets on private at the beginning of this trial because I merely tweeted, can we possibly get an impartial judge in this case? That's all I wrote. Well, one of these idiots must have posted it somewhere and said, let's get her. Because within 20 minutes, I was ratioed to with over 1,000 comments. And they were all coming at me like just attack. And so I had to just put my tweets on private. Of course, they've all gone away. But, oh, my God, I've never had a swarm like that before. I didn't say anything. There are times when I say things that are provocative that I expect to be hit back. But that, I merely said, could we possibly get a judge who's impartial? And it was astounding. So the ugly, and my block button has gotten a workout today too, because I'm not arguing with these people. When they come at me and say, he didn't do anything wrong, he was attacked by a mob, I'm just blocking them. I'm just not even arguing because I can't take it anymore. I'm really, really worried. I live in Florida, if that tells you anything, where we have this governor who's a madman. I call him moron death sentence. And he, you know, he signed a law. I don't know the status of it right now, but basically said you can drive your car into a crowd of people who are marching if they're in the streets. What the fuck? I'm sorry. We're online. I concurse, and I do. And especially on days like this, I do a lot. I'm just blown away. I'm really, I think that in this case, the Second Amendment, as these idiots see it, has eaten the First Amendment.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, again, I mean, you know, the sight of this provocateur with an AR-15 at these protests, you know, it's difficult because, that's sort of where we've gotten with these laws that we have now, you know, where that's an okay thing. And it's not an easy problem to kind of unwind, but, and every state is different. And you're right, Nicole, that Florida has been, I think, probably more so than any other state, on the forefront of stand your ground laws. And, you know, in Minnesota, even where I used to work as a reporter, when I was covering politics, so there was an effort to pass a bill that Republicans are trying to pass, similar to the one in Florida, that basically made it okay to run over protesters if they were blocking a roadway.
Right.
During the, you know, and so this like criminalization of protest and, you know, that has been, I mean, I kind of noticed even in Biden's statement today that one thing that's been kind of weird about this Rittenhouse case is that it seems like the victims here have been kind of erased. Like, we don't hear much about these two people who were killed. And obviously the third one who was shot and lived was, you know, a witness at the trial.
And apparently he blew it on the witness stand. Afterwards, he said, well, I made a mistake. He misspoke on the witness stand on something very crucial. Basically, he said, I pointed the gun at him. Well, okay, you just made his case. Before that, he said he hadn't, and now he's saying he didn't. But on the stand, he said, I was just intimidated, and I just blew it.
Yeah, and that, you know, that was a tricky thing. I mean, there are some big problems in the prosecution's case here, and that was one of them. You know, he was a very poor witness, so perhaps that was a bad idea to put him on the stand. Yeah. You know, there was a lot of back and forth between the judge and the prosecutor over, you know, a couple comments the prosecutor made alluding to evidence that was not permitted to be admitted into the trial. And, you know, the judge might've been a little bit confrontational in those situations too. I don't want to put all the blame on the prosecutor, but you know, it seemed like kind of a tricky case in a few different ways. And so again, that just gets back to, you know, even during the trial, and you said with Ellie, who you had on from The Nation, you know, there are a lot of people who are much smarter about legal affairs than I am, who seem to think it was going to be kind of an uphill battle to get a conviction here. And, you know, that's tragically how it played out here. And so now, you know, I'm kind of bracing for the, you know, I'm sure it'll be like a Tucker Carlson exclusive or something, the, you know, the interview with Kyle Rittenhouse. And, you know, I'm sure we're going to have to hear from this guy, you know, for the rest of our lives because he'll probably end up running for Congress.
Maybe he and George Zimmerman will form a partnership or something. Although George Zimmerman is not the, you know, the folk hero that he appeared to be at the beginning. Remember when he did a painting and it brought in like $250,000? I paint. I haven't gotten that kind of money. But you know, Rittenhouse, again, they are hailing him as some kind of a hero. And this is really dangerous. John Fugelsang, friend of mine, just tweeted, if Kyle Rittenhouse had been black, we'd all be fighting over why the cops who killed him aren't on trial.
Yep. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, yeah, can you imagine? I mean, you know, if it had been, you know, some sort of anti-mask protest or something and a black person showed up with an AR-15.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, like, can you imagine the cops, person being
right,
acquitted?
The cops wouldn't have waved him on. The cops would have shot him dead because he had a weapon. Kyle Rittenhouse, they're like giving water to and they're, you know, thanks, buddy. I don't know if you read Alexandra Petrie at the Washington Post. She had a column this week of that was just so spot on perfect. It was, I've always wanted to be a doctor. So I showed up in the operating room with a scalpel to help. I was there to help. And that's exactly what this is. And it's just astounding to me. Now, the judge had his finger on the scale without a doubt. The way he, I mean, just, not only did we see that he had the Kyle Rittenhouse pick the jurors who were going to be the alternates now, and then he explained that away. Well, I've done that in my courtroom for 20 years. Well, I don't care. This guy's on trial for a double murder, and you do yeah. that? But there was also another picture of Kyle Rittenhouse right next to the judge. I guess they were watching a video or something in the courtroom. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine if that was a black man accused of a double murder? It wouldn't happen.
Well, the moment that sticks in my mind is when his phone rang, the judge's phone rang, and it's the Trump rally theme song.
Yep. God bless the USA.
That sort of told me all I needed to know about that particular judge. Yep. And yeah, I mean, he had all these weird, you know, the first time that we kind of saw him in the news was over this weird thing where he doesn't allow victims to be called victims in his courtroom. And, you know, it does turn out that that's been a long time policy of his, but, you know,
doesn't make it right.
It still is, you know, these two people are obviously dead and one got their arm blown off. So, yeah, I mean, it just kind of seemed from the very beginning that this was going to be kind of a circus of a trial. And that's how it played out. I mean, I still thought that, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the cross-examination of Rittenhouse, I thought the prosecutor landed some blows on him during that and kind of backed him into the corner of admitting that he had lied about some things, you know, more than one thing. And, you know, so I thought, but it just ultimately wasn't enough, I guess, to convince this jury. And so, you know, that'll be another interesting thing to see if some of these jurors do interviews, if they kind of talk about what happened here, because they did deliberate for, you know, I think it was like three and a half days.
But,
which,
you know,
is a fairly long time.
I guess the fact that they didn't come back immediately, I guess, is something. I don't know what. But now there are two other trials that I believe the Charlottesville federal civil case goes to the jury today. I think the defense rested yesterday. Today would be closing arguments, and I guess it goes to the jury. And the Ahmaud Arbery case as well did closing arguments too. I guess they all want to be able to go home for Thanksgiving because some things are more important.
Well, right, and that may have played a role in the Rittenhouse,
I'm sure,
situation as well. That, you know, people didn't want to be deliberating through the holiday and stuff like that.
No doubt.
Yeah, it's just, you know, you would hope that wouldn't factor in, but, you know, these people are human. And so I wouldn't be surprised if it did. But yeah, I mean, there's just been a lot going on. I've been more focused outside of the Rittenhouse trial, which I've watched good chunks of, just with the wrangling going on, you know, on the Hill, and obviously the infrastructure and Build Back Better stuff. So the other two trials that you mentioned, I've seen kind of headlines and I've read articles about them, but I have not been following them the same way I was with Rittenhouse.
Right.
And I kind of got dragged into the Rittenhouse stuff unwillingly as well. But the cross-examination, I thought, was so compelling, when the prosecutor was cross-examining him, but then also when the defense attorneys were asking him questions on the stand too, that it kind of led to me watching a lot of the trial from that point onward. Because, you know, I'm not like a legal reporter,
right,
but obviously
right.
this was a trial that I think not only touched upon, you know, some complicated legal questions, but also some pretty deep stuff going on in our society and politics. And I think, again, you know, the one thing that today has really jumped out to me, and I think part of this, honestly, is just the fact that we had the Build Back Better being passed today. And mm-hmm. so I think a lot of right wingers are kind of out for blood, or they were looking to something to crow over, you know? And so it's really been insufferable kind of seeing the Ben Shapiro's of the world and the Glenn Greenwalds taking a victory lap over this, you know, as if it's some sort of vindication of, you know, kind of unfettered access to firearms, or, you know, kind of violence against counter protesters using violence against protesters, that sort of thing. And so, yeah, I mean, I just think it's been a really crazy day in that respect, because it was kind of like whiplash, where it felt like we were going to head in this weekend.
Right. It was going to be a good day. I mean, it was like, you know, today is an interesting day for me. I mean, today was my father's birthday. And it's also, you know, I go back 21 years ago today, I arrived in Kazakhstan to adopt my daughter. I adopted my daughter from an orphanage in Kazakhstan. Cool. And so now seeing, I know you covered this yesterday, the hearing for, I think it was a comptroller of the United States, a confirmation hearing for this woman who happened to have been born in Kazakhstan under Soviet control when it was part of the Soviet Union. And John Kennedy, shame on him for using that name. I guess it's his given name, but still, it's disconcerting to say John Kennedy and then talk about what he did. But he went into red baiting. He's like, are you a comrade or are you a colleague or a comrade? It's like, oh my God, is he Joseph McCarthy? It should have been Ted Cruz, who looks eerily like Joseph McCarthy, saying those words. Have you seen the two of them in pictures next to each other? Scary.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and the whole idea that Kennedy was trying to get across is that this woman, you know, is like a, you know, basically like today she's a communist because she was born in the Soviet Union and she went to school there. And so, you know, as you would, I think she's in her 50s. So she would have been like college aged, you know, what, I guess in the 80s.
Right. When the Soviet Union broke up. But she went to school.
And so
there.
Obviously, you know, if you were a student in the Soviet Union at that time, they have a lot of awards and stuff that, you know, that are the Lenin Award or the Marx Award, that sort of thing. And you know, this doesn't necessarily mean that she's a communist now. It's just sort of the cost of living in the Soviet Union as a student. And so, I think most people can kind of
Let me play devil's advocate here for a second. She's an academic. And as an academic, she wrote papers, like a paper supporting this position. Doesn't necessarily mean it's her position on privatizing, maybe nationalizing energy, which would not be a bad idea, which we should have done back in the 70s. But, you know, but I got attacked from people today because I dared to call out Kennedy for red baiting. And again, I'm just blocking them. I'm not getting into it with any of them. But the divide in this country in my lifetime, I don't think has ever been stronger, has ever been so clear. And I'm really scared. And the reason I brought up those other two trials is because those verdicts will be coming down probably within the next few days. I'm guessing before Thursday, so that they can all go home for Thanksgiving. And I'm really afraid for what it's going to show.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. And, you know, that's something that I've definitely noticed a lot. I mean, going back to the Trump years, too, but on the Republican side of the aisle, you know, both you see it during these hearings, you know, you see it on social media, but there's just a certain shamelessness that people like Kennedy have. I mean, you know, for instance, as you were talking about, there was this hearing yesterday. He has this just reprehensible line of questioning that when you kind of unpack what he's really insinuating, it's just
disgusting.
Not only is it disrespectful, but it's ridiculous. And then he was on Fox News today, asked about it, and was completely unrepentant, you know, basically saying that, you know, she has to answer for her past and this and that. And
he was berating her. He was saying, so did you, I guess every child born into that society is automatically put in the Young Communist Club or whatever they call it. He said, did you ever resign from that? I want to see your letter of resignation. She's like, well, it doesn't work that way. You just age out of it. You're automatically in and you age out. He said, well, look through your records because I want to see a letter of resignation. It's like, give it a fucking rest already.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an attempt to claim a scalp, you know, and it's an attempt to get on Hannity's show and kind of look, you know, look tough. Cause that's, I've written about this for my Substack as well. Just this idea that, and I'm blanking on what hearing it was recently where, who was testifying? Well, you know, it's just one Republican after the next, Kennedy included, where it's like, they're trying to craft these 30-second soundbites for Hannity, and that's really what they're, you know, point is it, let's get to the bottom of this issue, let's really explore what your positions are, or if you're a good fit for this role. I mean, it's all just kind of these very kind of confrontational questions that are just meant to be gotchas and kind of backfoot people and make them look silly and make these Republicans look tough. And, you know, when you watch these hearings all the way through, it's such a circus atmosphere because of that, but it allows Fox News to kind of parse it into these 20-second clips, you know, that makes it look like these Republicans are doing important accountability work when they're really not. And, you know, Kennedy is definitely one of the worst offenders in that respect. And that was, you know, probably the most egregious example. But I think, you know, the thing that really kind of stands out, you know, again, is that not that I would have expected him to apologize or just say that he, you know, wish he would have phrased it differently or something like that. But, you know, you see these guys, you see Kennedy on Fox News today asked about it. And he's just so unrepentant. And it just kind of speaks to, you know, it's irredeemable, you know, but it's not just him. That's basically the Republican Party from the top down at this point. And, you know, and it's just, you know, it really makes every election kind of an existential situation because, you know, if God forbid that Republicans have control of the House and Senate again, because, you know, like we saw it in the Trump years. I mean, these hearings turn into total circuses, and especially when Republicans are able to control the agenda. So that is, you know, it's a very perilous thing. It's a perilous place that we're at, but I guess we have to celebrate the good things when they happen, like this, the Build Back Better bill today and the bipartisan infrastructure bill earlier this week. And, you know, it seems like all the ducks are kind of in a row in the Senate to get that done there.
There's that Manchinima problem we have.
But I think at this point, the bill basically has everything that they've said that they've wanted, right? So, you know, the CBO score is out now.
Which is acceptable.
I just can't see anything at this point. You know, it seems like Sinema has been doing kind of like a rehabilitation tour in the last week or two, a lot of interviews that she's been doing. She's been stressing that she never, you know, she's not intending to be a problem or to derail anything, which to me, you know, I read some of these interviews as kind of constituting a bit of a walk back or attempt at rebranding. And so I would be really shocked at this point if it fell apart. And that'll be a big, you know, legislative victory for Biden, and hopefully will kind of flip the script a little bit, because, you know, it's been a few months now as these negotiations have dragged on and on and on, you know, along with Afghanistan and some, you know, some economic indicators that are of concern, including inflation. It's really taken a hit on his numbers. But, you know, this is a huge package that Congress is on the cusp of passing at this point and sending to his desk. And so, you know, hopefully that'll kind of flip things in his favor a little bit. But so anyway, you got to kind of celebrate the wins when you can. But
We need more wins. Yeah. Frankly, because the right is better at messaging. They're better at swarming. They're better at getting their people involved, because right now on the Democratic side, it's not very enthusiastic. But boy, they fire them up on the right, because all they have to do is, you know, Kyle Rittenhouse is in it. He didn't do anything wrong. Oh, my goodness. So we, you know, I think we have an enthusiasm gap, and they're going to have to fix that. And maybe the way to fix that is getting Build Back Better passed quickly through the Senate and getting some of those projects under, you know, in the works, so people see progress being made where they live, because they've got to turn this around before next November.
Oh, I'm right there with you. Yeah. I mean, I think that as much as we would like to think that we can kind of forecast a year out and what the state of affairs is going to be politically in November 2022, a lot's going to happen between now and then. So I try not to get too wrapped up in, like, you know, generic ballot polling, that sort of thing. I mean, it's been a while since Republicans have had a good election cycle. I mean, you have to go back to basically 2016, right? Because 2018, they got wiped out. 2020 wasn't great. And, you know, I don't think that's an accident. I mean, I think, you know, again, you watch McCarthy's speech yesterday, and you kind of see how bankrupt the party is in terms of having any real ideas besides kind of performative anger and, you know, hysteria. So, but, you know, you raised some really good points. I mean, I thought the Virginia elections was kind of a good illustration of how the right wing messaging apparatus can really work to mobilize people. This whole critical race theory thing, which became this, like, big issue, and it seemed like Democrats were kind of caught flat footed, and there's, you know, there's no equivalent to Fox News on the left to kind of push these political talking points, you know? So there are some kind of structural problems there, but I think that, you know, you're also right to kind of suggest that, you know, if Build Back Better, you know, gets through the Senate quickly and gets signed into law, you know, hopefully that can be something positive that Dems can run on next year, that they did, you know, get some bold things done in the 2 years that they've had control of Congress. And so, you know, I think that all kind of remains to be seen, but I try not to get too crazy over like the generic ballot polling that shows that it's going to be a tough cycle, because I just think a lot's going to happen.
Too much. And you know, time moves very slowly or very quickly. A year is an eternity, so anything can happen. Aaron Ruppert, I know you have dad duties. That's one of the benefits of following your Twitter stream, because we get to see your adorable little girl, Mia. And we saw her from a tiny little baby, and now she's walking. I love the good mornings when she comes like running around the corner. She's just precious. So,
well, thank you. I really enjoy that people enjoy it themselves, and kind of, you know, I think a lot of people kind of live vicariously through her during the pandemic. And actually my wife is visiting her family this week, so I'm kind of doing like single dad duty this week, and that has been, while I'm trying to work and stuff, it's been kind of challenging, but I'm glad that it's Friday. So you know, but no, it's always nice joining you. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for coming. Real quickly, tell everybody about your Substack and what you do and how to get it and why they should subscribe.
Oh, yeah, I always forget to kind of work in a plug.
You got
to
do that.
AaronRuppert.substack.com. I'm basically doing the same sort of work I was doing at Vox, a lot of explanatory journalism and accountability journalism. I do a lot of kind of recaps of big events. So I have something up today about the McCarthy speech and why he didn't talk about the actual BBB bill and kind of what that says about where Republicans are at these days. And earlier this week, I wrote about the Gosar censure hearing, which we didn't even have a chance to talk about. But, you know, so each week I'm doing 3 or 4 posts generally. Usually 2 of them are free and then 2 are for paid subscribers. So if you enjoy my work either on Twitter or my written work at Vox or now on Substack, I encourage people to check it out and please subscribe. And like I said, you can find it at AaronRuppert.substack.com.
And I'll have a link to it from my blog at NicoleSandler.com, where I post the show. So it'll be there and it'll always be there. And hopefully people subscribe. Aaron, thank you so much. Have a great weekend with Mia. Enjoy her while she's... It goes so fast. I adopted my daughter 21 years ago. Wow. And it's like, boom, she's 22 now. It's unbelievable. So
I'll try to.
It goes quickly. Enjoy. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Aaron Ruppert, everybody. And yes, do subscribe to his stuff. And if you don't follow his Twitter stream, you should, because there is a lot of content there. So here's the deal. This has been, talk about a roller coaster of a week, right? It started on Monday with the Biff. I'm calling it the whatchamacallit because it's a stupid name, right? But the House, the so-called bipartisan, passed the so-called bipartisan infrastructure framework. Well, it's not a framework anymore now. It is a law because the Senate had already passed it. They were just waiting on the House. They sent it over to the president, who signed it, even though he said he wasn't going to sign it until the Build Back Better bill was there. They could do them together in tandem to give them leverage to make sure that both sides get passed. Obviously, the polling numbers came out and they were not very good for President Biden, and he realized they needed to do something. So thankfully, today, the Build Back Better, the reconciliation part of it, passed the House. It goes back to the Senate, where they will make changes. The CBO score really is irrelevant because they're going to change it. But anyway, so that happened this week. Then we had these 3 trials going on, and it's been a roller coaster. So I'll tell you what, we got about 17 minutes left. Phone lines are open, 954-889-6410. If you want to weigh in on anything that happened this week, there's plenty to choose from. So I'd love to hear from you. What do you think about this Rittenhouse thing? What scares me is it's twofold. One, during the pandemic, gun sales grew exponentially. They went through the roof. That's what sold more than anything else, guns. And you know who has the guns? The crazies on the right, who project. They're the ones stealing elections. They're the ones, you know, going out and provoking incidents like the murders by Kyle Rittenhouse, and then they proclaim their innocence, and where are the bad ones? And they believe it, and that's what's frightening, because they have media outlets that lie to them under the guise of news. They call Fox News. They call OAN News. They call Newsmax News. They call the New York Post News. And the problem is they may put like, you know, one or two little things in there that are that have some semblance of truth. And then they make shit up to go around it. And the people who get their information from those outlets believe that it's true. And that's why, and you know, that's why it's so dangerous. Joy's back. Hey, Joy.
They call Newsmax.
Joy, you got to turn the radio down because there's a delay.
News.
Hello.
Yeah. Hello. You got to turn the sound down.
Okay.
I got to bring you down. When you call in, you know, we're not on the air, but there is a delay. So when you call in. If you don't, if you have the radio turned up or the computer sound on, you're not going to hear me. You have to listen through the phone. So when you call in, listen through the phone. All right. I'll tell you what. I don't know about you. I could use a little bit of a, you know, a palate cleanser, as it were. The Parody Project has a new video out, a new song parody, and I think it's appropriate for a day like today. So let's do that, and then I'll come back and take your calls. How's that? Does that work? I hope it does, because that's what we're going to do. Can I get this going? Here we go. All right. It goes like the, and now somebody's calling back, and it comes in on that line, on that pod. Hold on 1 second. All right. Joy's calling back. I think, I don't, now I'm not even seeing where I can pick her up. Hold on. I'll get back to you. All right. I just screwed everything up. What did I do here? Oh my goodness. Now you're seeing my my tweet deck. Hold on. It's a good thing it's Friday. Where is that video now? Oh, here it is. All right. Let's do this because we need it. I need it. Maybe you need it, but I definitely need it.
Money sucks the Congress down. They see it and their brains confound. They can be bought here around. They're not by duty bound. They used to sneak their way around and snatch up bribes without a sound. But since corruption's been unbound, there's no shame to be found. On that we will expound.
Money, 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 money.
If you happen to be rich from this Oxford of bribes and you're stuck in as a tenant of the Senate where you sit, you can easily ignore everything but the profit opportunity, blinded by the money you can get. It's another bait and switch, got you there with the help of the donors as they moan. And they groan quite a lot, but they handed you a wing. Take the call, got a skull for your owners on your 14-carat yacht.
What?
Congress has been bought and sold, sniffing about to find more gold. It's a corporate stranglehold, and watching it unfold is awful to behold.
Money, money, money. Money, money, money. Money, money, money.
If the country needs a bomb or a war or a fleet of whatever, money's there right away, no delay. If it happens that a big corporation says they need a bigger bailout, they will get it on the very same day.
Not a crumb back to you for the taxes that you pay, because you need to be protected. Socialism kept at bay. Education, living wage, healthy care for old age can't be done. Cost too high, so we'll leave you there to die.
Money, money, money. Money, money, money. Money, money, money. Money, money, money.
Money, 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 money.
When you haven't any coal in the stove, and you freeze in the winter, and you curse to the wind at your fate. When you haven't any shoes on your feet, and you're close thin as paper, and you look 30 pounds underweight.
Don't expect to get the help that you need from the Congress or the Senate. Start pulling up the straps on your boots. Never mind the rhyme, hypocrisy that lies at the bottom of the tenet that you're living by the labor of your fruits.
Money sucks the Congress down. They see it and their brains confound. They can be bought year around. They're not by duty bound.
Money, 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 money.
Give a little, get a little. Money, 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 money. Now the corruption's been unbound. There is no shame at all to be found. Money sucks the Congress down. It sucks the Congress down.
There you go. Parody Project, everyone. Money sucks the Congress down. truer words were never sung. I mean, it's funny because it's true. It's sad funny, not ha-ha funny, although there were some ha-ha funny moments. Wow. what a statement on life today. Okay, Joy, if you're listening, you can call back now. But when you call in, you need to turn the computer down because we can hear it in the background. So anyway, 954-889-6410 is the number. I'm hoping we can all have a nice weekend. I know it's going to be really stormy. You know, I was supposed to do my very first art show. I was all set. I got the tent. I've been making signs. I've been painting, finishing up some pictures that I've been in the, you know, that I've had here that I weren't necessarily finished, and making up gift certificates and things like that to sell at this holiday fair. And it's going to rain here all weekend. And they canceled it. They just canceled the event this morning. So, yeah. So hopefully in the next couple of weeks, I'll do a few more of these holiday fairs. But yeah, so that kind of sucked. And then the news today that this verdict, I was rendered speechless. I really was. I don't understand the divide in this country. And as I said before, I don't think we've been divided like this, certainly not in my lifetime. And it scares me. I hate to say the words, and I've read a few things recently along the same lines, that I think we are headed for some kind of a civil war. And I hate saying it, but that's what it feels like. All right, Joy, can you hear me now?
Hello?
Hi, can you hear me now? Uh-oh, Joy doesn't hear me.
I can't hear you.
Oh, shoot. Okay. So now we know that there's an issue here. Joy's not hearing me. I got to figure out, because it worked yesterday, and now it's not working today. Why would that be?
I can barely hear you.
You can barely hear me. Huh.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I don't get. Well, I can hear
wait,
you.
Let me check something.
Okay.
Better.
Better? All okay. Right. You hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. So it's not me.
Yeah, barely, but it's still low.
Okay. So what's on your mind? Talk to us. Are you feeling better today than you were yesterday?
A little bit.
Okay.
But what I wanted to say was this ruling just really, it's weird because my dad was a judge in the JAG.
Okay.
U.S. Air Force. He was a really good judge. He was an excellent judge. And if he had seen this ruling, he would have been turning in his grave. Because what this judge did was just so radically out of control. This guy doesn't know a damn thing about law.
Well, he's been a judge there for over 20 years, and he does things his own way, which I think are fucked up.
Yeah, well, he's wrong.
Right, right. I'll tell you something else. So, you know what? This is done. There's nothing we can do. It's done. We can't appeal. Once the jury has a verdict,
people are going to go out and start taking vigilante jumps.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. That's why today's, I titled today's show, Welcome to the United States of Vigilantism, because that's where we are now. That's what this ruling did today. It said, take the law into your own hands. It said, just, you know, as Alexandra Petri wrote in the Washington Post the other day, you can go into an operating room with a scalpel and say, I always wanted to be a doctor. I love you guys. I respect you guys. I'm here to help. Where do you draw the line? How is somebody able to shoot a gun and kill somebody? And then when they went after him because he killed somebody, he kills another person. It just is inconceivable to me. And that they found him not guilty.
Absolutely. It's absolutely unbelievable in terms of judicial press prudence.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to be disbarred.
Yeah.
He needs to lose his job.
But he's not going to.
He is completely out of line.
Well, you see that, and I see that. But all these people, I got attacked online because I dared to say, can we please get an impartial judge? So...
Which you shouldn't have been.
Of course I shouldn't have been. But
and I totally agree with you. I mean, this has just been, I don't know, it affected me deeper than I thought it would. You know, I expected this idiot to walk, but I realized when I woke up and I heard this morning, it really undermined my belief in the justice system in the country.
Well, it does mine. I have no faith. Look, I am concerned. I think I'm afraid. Here's where I am today. Me as a citizen, as just a regular average human being, which is all I am afraid to participate in a protest, especially down here in Florida, because our governor has it in for us, because he's certainly partisan and violently partisan. So he believes
it's a dog whistle to all of the shooters out there who want to shoot people for no freaking reason.
Uh-huh.
And it also, I don't know what they call it, but it's when they tone down dissent and protest.
I'm telling you, the Second Amendment in this Trumpian society in which we live, the Second Amendment has eaten the First Amendment. We do.
I have a question for you.
Yeah. Okay.
You said you fear a civil war.
I do.
How would that work?
They take over everything, and if we try to stand up, they will shoot us.
How are they going to know
We're protesters. If we protest what they do, if we use our constitutional right to assemble and peacefully protest, they, here in Florida, the governor thinks it's okay that they drive a car into our crowd. And in Wisconsin, they think it's okay if one of them shoots us. So
yeah, but how do they know who is us and who is them?
Well, it's going to be kind of apparent. There are them and then there are us, I think. Joy, I'm going to run because
it's not like it's states, you know. It's
right. Just, well, that, you know, oftentimes you don't know who the enemy is when they're not wearing uniforms. But that is what it is. I want to grab another call, but Joy, thank you for calling. I'm glad you sound better today than yesterday. All right, 562 area code. Hi, who's this?
Hey, Nicole, Mario.
Mario. Hi, God, what a day, huh?
Oh, my God, I am just beyond words about that. But I was just calling to, voice in my outrage.
Yep.
End of conversation with that, but more importantly, today would have been my late wife's 65th birthday.
Oh, Mario, I'm so sorry. Today would have been my father's 96th birthday. 96th birthday for my dad. You know what? Here's how you have to look at it.
Everyone, just stay focused.
On what matters.
What's happened, and what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
Enough said.
Yeah. No, you got to think about what happened, and be thankful that you had her for as long as you did. Look, you know, I can't imagine what it's like to lose a spouse. I can't. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, we were married 42 years.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
So.
Mario, well, our thoughts are with you today. November 19th.
Anyway,
again.
Talk to you soon.
Yes. Okay. Bye. Thank you, Mario. Bye-bye. Oh, that breaks my heart. You know, this is not the same thing. As I said, today would have been my dad's 96th birthday, November 19th, another Scorpio, he and I. When I see friends who have lost a parent, and it's totally different from losing a spouse, I can't even imagine. But when I see like friends who say, you know, I lost my dad today, my heart breaks for them, and I'm not usually the optimist. You know, I usually look at the pessimistic side of things. There's a reason my name is Nicole. You put a C-Y in front of it. It's cynical. But when I hear a friend who's a contemporary of mine say that they just lost a parent, I tell them how lucky they were to have had that parent in their life for so long. I lost my mom 10 days before my 20th birthday. So when I hear someone who's my age say, oh, you know, I just lost my mother, I think how lucky they are. So it's how we look at things. Mario, I'm glad you had so long with your wife and you had such a wonderful, obviously loving relationship with her. Try to focus on that today. I know it's hard, and I'm the one who always looks at the glass as half empty. But folk, you had 40 years together. That's something to celebrate. So think of that and realize that a lot of people never find love in their lives. So you had that. And maybe that'll give you some comfort. And I'm so sorry you're alone today. Oy, I'm sorry for all of us the way this week turned out, because it really, really sucks. So try to have a good weekend. Try to not think about this. I know it's easier said than done. But try to find some joy somewhere. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. I'll leave you with the news. Let's hope next week is better. All right. Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Breaking news Friday morning. A jury in Kenosha, Wisconsin found Kyle Rittenhouse not guilty on all counts. I'm speechless.
On this vote, the yeas are 220. The nays are 213. The Build Back Better bill is passed.
Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi announcing the passage of the Build Back Better bill by the House Friday morning. The bill now goes back to the Senate, so it's far from a done deal. But it has passed the House, a victory for the president, a victory for the Democrats, and hopefully a victory for the American people. But they had to overcome a big 11th hour delay, or maybe I should call that an 8.5 hour delay. Here's what happened. The CBO on Thursday released its long-awaited score on the bill, the one thing that some of the House Democrats had been waiting for before voting on it. The score came back surprisingly positive, finding it will increase the deficit, realizing that additional revenue will be raised by IRS enforcement on wealthy tax cheats. And once that's taken into account, the deficit amount added in the scope of the size of the federal budget is very small. So once the CBO score was released, Democrats were ready to vote, Speaker Pelosi knowing that she had the votes to pass it. But on Thursday night, shortly after 8:30 p.m., Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy began a speech reminiscent of an old talking filibuster, something that's actually unique to the Senate, just saying. Anyway, it seemed that McCarthy's goal was to delay the vote so that it would happen in the middle of the night. But when his nonsensical talking approached the 3.5 hour mark, just after midnight, Pelosi returned to the floor to send her members home, telling them that the vote would instead happen on Friday morning. So leadership announced the House would reconvene at 8 a.m. Friday, but McCarthy kept speaking. He continued until 5:11 a.m. Friday morning, completing an 8.5 hour long rambling speech that, for the most part, had nothing to do with the legislation he was trying to delay. The significance, though, of the length of the speech he delivered is that it passed Nancy Pelosi's 2018 speech, when she did something similar but was speaking in support of legislation to give Dreamers a road to citizenship. That speech ran 8 hours and 7 minutes and, until this morning, held the record for the longest House speech ever. So all McCarthy wanted to do was break the record. And in fact, tobacco chewing, Madison Cawthorn shouted, "You broke the record!" And shortly after that, McCarthy finally yielded back. That was his goal. To break a meaningless record for the longest speech in the history of the House? Representative Jamie Raskin tweeted midway through the tirade, quote, "It's a feat of epic proportions to speak for 4 hours straight and not produce a single memorable phrase, original insight, or even a joke." Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez went into the cloakroom to fire up Instagram Live and say this,
"It is a sad day in which a member who leads a political party in the United States of America cannot bring themselves to say that issuing a depiction of murdering a member of Congress is wrong, and instead decides to venture off into a tangent about gas prices and inflation. What is so hard? What is so hard about saying that this is wrong? This is not about me. This is not about Representative Gosar, but this is about what we are willing to accept."
So they returned at 8 a.m. Friday morning when the Republicans again tried delay tactics to keep the Build Back Better agenda from passing. But they got past that, voted on the bill, giving the victory to the Democrats, President Biden, and the American people, but not quite yet. The bill now goes back to the Senate, where it will no doubt undergo changes. But first, Congress leaves for the week. That's how it goes. There's still a lot to be done before the end of the year. And as we've noted regularly here, government funding runs out December 3rd, and shortly thereafter will again hit the debt ceiling and a potential first ever default. Now, you got to remember how ugly things got in October over the same issue. But now, with another deadline approaching, some sources say that they're taking a slightly more conciliatory approach. In a brief interview on Thursday ahead of a meeting with Schumer, McConnell said, quote, "The best way to characterize it is we're going to be discussing the way forward." Well, that sounds almost bipartisan. In the courts, it seems that they too want to finish up to get home to enjoy Thanksgiving. Travis McMichael, the white man who shot and killed Ahmaud Arbery in February of 2020, admitted during his trial on Thursday that Arbery never threatened him, say anything or show a weapon, before McMichael pointed his shotgun at the 25-year-old black jogger. Cell phone video, replayed in court Thursday, showed McMichael pointing the shotgun at Arbery as he runs around the pickup truck, then raising it again when the two came face to face in front of the truck, and McMichael fires. McMichael was one of just seven witnesses called by the defense before they rested on Thursday afternoon. Closing arguments today, and then that case goes to the jury. And the defense in the federal civil lawsuit against the organizers of the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, back in 2017, they rested their case on Thursday. And this happened, too. Two men convicted of assassinating Malcolm X were exonerated Thursday after renewed investigation spurred by a Netflix documentary uncovered evidence proving authorities had withheld evidence that they were not the ones who gunned down the civil rights activist. The two men, Aziz and Islam, had both long maintained their innocence. Both were paroled in the 80s. Islam died in 2009. Mr. Aziz, now in his 90s, was present in the courtroom. And this was a surprise. The governor of Oklahoma, Kevin Stitt, commuted the death sentence of condemned inmate Julius Jones Thursday afternoon, just hours before his scheduled execution. Jones had been proclaiming his innocence from death row for more than two decades already in the 1999 killing of a suburban Oklahoma City businessman. The judge commuted the 41-year-old Jones' death sentence to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. Jones had been scheduled for execution at 4 p.m. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.